Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
Welcome to Locked On Eagles, your daily source for the best Philadelphia Eagles news and analysis. I am your host, Michael Kist. You can follow my work at Breaking Football, Inside the Pylon, and you can follow me on Twitter at Michael J. Kist. That's K-I-S-T. I am here with my co-host, Benjamin Solak of Bleeding Green Nation and NDT Scouting. You can follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. Ben, how you doing, brother?
Oh, every day is a great day, Mike. I'm not going to let you slide inside the pylon in there so quickly and quietly, though, as if we wouldn't notice. Many congratulations are due to Mike, my dear listeners and dear friends. He has recently been, accepted, hired, asked, invited to write for Inside the Pylon, which is really awesome. Mike brings excellent insight to the game in all facets, and he is very deserving of such a esteemed platform. So many congrats to you, Mike.
Thank you so much, Ben. I am going to be doing stuff for their yearly draft guide. If you're listening and you haven't checked out Inside the Pylon, go there now because they have some fantastic football analysis on there covering the college and the pro game. If you want to learn more about football, that is definitely a great resource. How was your weekend, Ben? Did you see the Conor McGregor-Floyd Mayweather fight?
I did. I illegally watched it on Periscope, like the millennial that I am, with my younger brother who, like yesterday, he was a kid who didn't understand things, and now he's like watching a boxing match with me, and my first thought is he's always doing it to be hanging out with his big brother, you know? But then he's throwing out terminology, and he's talking about like the Jeff Horn fight, and I was like, oh my gosh, like the... Being at college, man, you miss the growing up, and then it comes in a quantum leap. But it was actually a really cool opportunity to just like chill with my brother and like talking some boxing. But it was a very entertaining fight. I had a great time watching it.
I had a great time watching it. I was bedridden all Sunday because of it. Had too many adult beverages. My wife was very understanding, thankfully, today and took care of me as I made several trips to the shower and the bathroom and just laid in bed all day. It was a non-productive day, but here we are. Also want to shout out Ben here because he's making a great sacrifice. He has 20 minutes left of Game of Thrones to watch and stopped what he was doing to jump on and talk about the Dallas Cowboys Get to Know a Rival show here. So we're going to get right into it so Ben can get back to watching the other love of my life, Game of Thrones.
If you say anything, Michael, what's your middle name? John?
Yeah.
Yep. Michael John Kist, if you say anything... Hell hath no fury. Hell hath no... I'm 20 minutes left. Hell hath no fury. Now we may begin.
Okay. I'm going to try to restrain myself, but it went down. So, going right into the Get to Know a Rival series, the Dallas Cowboys, they played over this weekend against the Oakland Raiders. Cooper Rush, again, looked fantastic. Check out this stat line. I'm not going to dwell on this too much, but... Cooper Rush is 38 for 51, 398 yards, 6 touchdowns, and no interceptions in the preseason. And somehow Kellen Moore is still listed as the backup, if I'm not mistaken. I know I asked this before, but is Cooper Rush the next Dak Prescott?
Okay. Did you see, I retweeted this, I'm going to go find it right now. There was a headline release, I believe it was PFT, who they were like, yep, it was Pro Football Talk. And the headline says this, and it's for an article. It says, Cooper Rush could be the second Tony Romo, but for the fact that the Cowboys have the first Dak Prescott. This doesn't even make... This is like trying to keep track of Targaryen lineages, man. Like, it's impossible at this point now. Cooper Rush, the second Tony Romo, but he's actually not the second Tony Romo because the Cowboys have the first Dak... I can't do this, man. It's too much of a mental gymnastics for me.
That is amazing. All right, so let's jump into it. Your thoughts on their preseason other than the second Tony Romo preseason from Cooper Rush, I guess? Overall thoughts, analysis, some guys that may have surprised you, how Lyle Collins is looking at right tackle, man, fire away with whatever you want to talk about.
Lyle looks good, and we should definitely talk about him for a second, but there has to be something said for the performance that Dak has put out. And granted, you know, it's preseason, we're going to take a stock, you know, we're going to take stock in things lightly. We've been preaching preseason and proportionate reactions here for a couple weeks now. But no, I mean, he looks as fantastic as he did, as sharp as he did. He's accurate. He's making good decisions. He's poised in the pocket. the line definitely looks like it's not taking a step back, and that's helping Dak a lot. But for anybody who was expecting a sophomore slump, which I didn't know there were that many people who were, but given the staunch defense from Cowboys Twitter, who every time Dak has a good play, they kind of, you know, throw out sophomore slump in these big quotation marks. I don't really know people were suspecting a sophomore slump. But, yeah, no, I don't foresee it happening. Obviously, it's going to be a little bit of a different game for those first 6 weeks of the season. You know, I don't think they're going to be able to win the time of possession battle as well as they did in 2016. But it should be interesting to see how Dak does in those first 6 weeks, because he has to kind of handle the ball a little bit more, handle the offense a little bit more. As of right now, there's no reason to believe he won't be able to handle it. He's a good quarterback.
He has looked really sharp in the preseason. And like I said, when I first talked about the possible Cowboys regression, which we're going to get into, I explicitly stated that I don't think that Dak Prescott was going to take a step back. So that's never been my argument for it. It was just replacing the snaps in the defensive backfield, replacing the snaps at the line. We don't know, or we didn't know at the time, what Leo Collins was going to look at it as a right tackle. And he has had some struggles, but overall I felt he looked good in the Raiders game. I think he had 3 penalties in 20 plays. It just some awkwardness with his hands. There was a hands to the face call, if I'm not mistaken, but I think
couple,
that stuff
yeah.
is yeah very very teachable, and he'll get used to it, and he's a top talent. So I wouldn't expect him not to be successful at right tackle. It's just going to take some reps, and we learned that watching Lane Johnson kicking over to the left side. It's not so easy just to kick left or right or inside or outside or anything like that. So with that being said, what do you think about their defense in the preseason? Has anything stood out to you? Taco Charlton has looked okay at times. Jalen Smith has looked all right at times, but you know, he's still dealing with that knee. What are your overall impressions of their defense?
Patchwork. They've got pieces. You know, I will say that. You know, you have stuff about which to be excited. I think Malik Collins has definitely stood out for them, and I liked where they grabbed him. I believe it was the 2016 draft where he came out, if memory serves, the same draft with Prescott and with Elliott. But Collins has definitely stood out for me. Obviously the Hitchens injury hurts a linebacking core that was weak to begin with, and it looks like he's not going to be able to make it for the entire season. But this is a defense that for me is starting so many pieces that, you know, just give you pause. They've got Jeff Heath as one of their starting safeties. He's been a backup for his entire career. You've got last year's sixth round selection in Anthony Brown starting at corner when, you know, he certainly had a productive season in limited time last year, but anytime you're starting a sixth rounder from last year, that's got to be a question mark. You've got 3 defenders who are currently on suspension in DeMontre Moore, Randy Gregory, and David Irving. Those are all along the defensive line. So how much are you pushing your depth there? You might have another suspension in Damian Wilson, who's looking at potentially breaking the personal conduct policy of the NFL. You didn't make any real significant additions to your front 7 rotation besides getting Jalen Smith back from injury, which is as big of a question mark as there comes. And you've got Taco Charlton as your first-round selection. But like you said, he's looked decent. And you lost Randy Gregory, last year's first-round talent. You got him in the second round, but still first-round talent. I don't see how this defense got any better than it was last year. And last year, it was pretty solid against the run, but it was in the bottom half of all pass defending categories imaginable. And so I don't... And you lost your number one, you lost your leader in interceptions in Barry Church. And so it seems to me like I don't see how this defense improved, and they're reflecting that in the preseason.
Yeah, and they have 0 interceptions in the preseason. 8 sacks, which is a healthy number for this. That's over 2 a game. That'll get it done. But 0 interceptions in the preseason is definitely cause for concern, and they have 2,800 snaps replacing that defensive backfield. So they tried to address that in the draft, and we're going to talk about their draft class right now. So in the first round with the 28th overall pick, they went with Taco Charlton. We just spoke about him a little bit. I really like Taco. I was probably higher on Taco than you were.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so I had him as a first-round talent. I had him over, I think on the last show I was talking about having him over Barnett. Hopefully I'm wrong on that. Feel free to get all up in my mentions and call me an idiot on Twitter for that, but that's just how I felt at the time. His trademark spin move has looked just as good as it did in college. What were your overall thoughts of Taco Charlton, Ben?
No, absolutely. I had Charlton right there at the top of the second round, so he was a slight reach for me, but really quite excusable, especially because the only edge defender The only edge defenders I had rated above him were Carl Lawson and my firstborn son, Joe Mathis, both of whom had significant injury concerns, and so it's understandable why they didn't go as early. And then, yeah, I had Derek Barnett just one tier below Taco Charlton, one step down on my rankings. Yep. Right, Charlton, he's a good fit for Dallas as far as what they want to do. You know, Tack McKinley I didn't think was going to be a fit as far as what they wanted from their 4-3 ends. Their 4-3 ends do have to be very present against the run. They have to be physical. And I think Charlton has the profile for that, even though it wasn't necessarily the strongest thing you saw in college. And limited production, but the athletic upside was there for Charlton as far as what you saw on tape, for him to string together pass rush moves and to generate a rush. At the end of the day, this is a guy who, in front of him on the depth chart, for Dallas at left defensive end, they have, I believe, who is it now? Tyrone Crawford, and then they have DeMarcus Lawrence at left end, and they have Tyrone Crawford at right end. Charlton, if he's a first round pick, should be able to come and immediately break into that rotation. That is not a good rotation of ends, and he hasn't, and that's got to be a moment of concern for the Dallas Cowboys.
Thought he was questionable against the run as well, so he only served as a situational pass rusher for the beginning of his career in his rookie year. And in the second round, the Cowboys started to address their secondary needs, and we are going to talk about that right after this.
Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
Now, I wanted to mention an opportunity for you, gentle listener. Locked On Eagles still has some inventory for sponsorships for the upcoming Eagles season. This is a great and affordable way to connect with Eagles fans like you. Podcast listeners are 65% more likely to connect with sponsors than other media forms, so email me directly at LockedOnEagles@mail.com. That's LockedOnEagles@mail.com. Our rates are reasonable and based on the number of listens. You can have your business right here on Locked On Eagles. In the second round, the Cowboys went with Chidobe Awuzie, or is it Awuzie? I'm always confused by that.
Yeah, I've heard a couple things. Awuzie was what I was taught, and I stick with that.
All right, we're going to stick with that then. He's a 6-foot, 202-pounder in the second round with the 28th pick in that second round. I really liked Awuzie's game, and I think I thought this was great value at the time. I had him as a first-round talent as well, and I think he can do a lot of things in that secondary and fill different holes because I think he can hold up on the outside. I think he can play in the slot, which is where I prefer him, and then I think he can also fill in as a safety as well. Very good blitzer, so he brings upside in the nickel patch package with that. What did you think about Awuzie coming out?
Yeah, I had Awuzie as a mid-to-early second-round sort of a guy. I liked what he brought as far as athleticism goes. I liked what he brought as far as instincts goes. I was definitely concerned about, I thought he was a better nickel than he was a boundary guy. And for as much as the nickel corner has become more valued over time, I still didn't think that you were going to spend a first rounder on a guy who was going to predominantly be your nickel. And so the drafting of guys like Adoree Jackson and Trey White and Kevin King, all of whom I had below Awuzie, kind of pushed him down. And the Cowboys did well to snatch him up. Now, Awuzie left practice this past, a couple Thursdays ago it was. And he's been day-to-day for a couple weeks now. And he hasn't seen significant practice time or significant preseason time. Which has to be concerning. He didn't play this previous Saturday, and he had like a pretty good beginning to camp, but then he hasn't been able to finish it up, and so you wonder what's going to happen for him there as far as breaking the rotation goes. I definitely like the Awuzie pick. You can definitely see with both Awuzie and then with a third-round selection of Jordan Lewis out of Michigan that the Cowboys wanted to bring in bodies. Marquez White in the fifth, I believe it was, as well, at Florida State. They wanted to bring in bodies to that secondary to bolster it. At this point now, you've got Orlando Scandrick as one of your starting corners, and he has strung together 16 games, I think, once in the past 5 years, as far as his injury history goes. Mm-hmm. And then you've got Brown behind him, a sixth rounder from last year, and then pretty much your depth is looking like a slew of rookies. And so there's a lot of talent there between Awuzie and Jordan Lewis as far as nickel guys who can really match and mirror with quickness. Marquez White's got some potential on the outside as far as a bigger-bodied guy, but I heard he might not even make the team. That corner depth is, especially if Owusu can't get healthy throughout the year, suspect for sure.
Yeah, I was not big on Marquez White, and as you hit on Jordan Lewis there, he had some issues off the field that kind of dropped his stock a little bit, but I thought he was real sticky. He played well at the Senior Bowl and everything. Look, fourth round, man, we got to talk about it. Ryan Switzer, the wide receiver from North Carolina.
I'm playing the violin, Mike. Go for it.
Look, before the draft, Josh Norris had a Periscope, and he was talking about potential Eagles targets, and Ryan Switzer and Shelton Gibson were two of the targets that he was sort of hinting at. I was reading between the lines, but I kind of figured it was those two. And I had tweeted out that I would much rather have a dependable third down target from the slot like Ryan Switzer than a developmental guy like Shelton Gibson, who may just be a one-trick pony, and that one-trick pony may not even transition all that well to the NFL. Now, here we are in August, and Ryan Switzer's been limited some by a hamstring issue. I still have total faith in him. I think he's a fantastic route runner. I mean, look at the success that Trent Taylor's having in San Francisco, and I think Ryan Switzer's an upgrade over him. So I wanted a dependable guy that could get open in between, you know, the short to intermediate area for Wentz as a safety blanket that you could pair with Ertz on those shorter routes in the middle of the field and really do a lot of damage. And we passed on him. And while I like what I've seen from Mac Hollins so far, I have not liked what we've seen from Shelton Gibson. Shelton Gibson has had serious trouble catching the ball, really just catching the ball. You kind of have to be able to do that to be a successful receiver in the NFL and see time on the field. He might not even make this team. Marcus Johnson, I believe, has performed much better this offseason and in the preseason than Shelton Gibson, and maybe taking that spot from him. I was extremely upset at the draft in the fourth round. That was day three. I was walking around with my tall boy beers and all that. And when they picked Switzer, man, it kind of ruined my day. I'm not even going to lie. It really ruined my day. I was really high on Switzer, and I think you can get away with taking a guy like that in the third round because he's going to give you so much reliability and dependability on the passing down. So how'd you feel about Ryan Switzer?
I mean, my first thought is you say that you want a receiver who can reliably get open in the short and intermediate areas for Wentz. We already have one of those. The problem is he can't catch. His name is Nelson Agholor.
Right.
And he's fantastic at getting open. It's just every part after that is not as pretty. The biggest thing with the Switzer pick was the fact that it was rumored the Cowboys were trying to move up for Danelle Pumphrey. The Eagles instead moved up to select Pumphrey, and then sticking where they were because they did not get their prize, the Cowboys drafted Ryan Switzer, which obviously the last time the Cowboys tried to trade up for somebody, didn't get them and had to have a consolation, they didn't get Paxton Lynch, who now can't break Trevor Siemian for the starting job in Denver, and instead they got Dak Prescott. And obviously, we're not going to crown Ryan Switzer as, wait for it, the next Dak Prescott. But it is interesting. It's an interesting storyline to follow. Obviously, pairing Switzer with Cole Beasley is a nightmare and a half as far as how you have the athleticism to match up with those guys. You can't play zone on them because speed outs, and that's all you need to know. And then you don't have two men who can match up with those guys, assuming that Switzer and Beasley both play similar styles and Switzer translates, which there's no reason to believe he shouldn't. That was definitely one of those the rich got richer sort of selections where you look at a receiving core that has Dez Bryant, that has Cole Beasley, that has, you know, athletic freak and Bryce Butler, that has Terrence Williams, who, you know, isn't fantastic, but he's a decent number two, and he'll get you done. You know, he has Jason Witten reliable across the middle, and then you add Ryan Switzer to that group. It just, you know, NFC East secondary's grown at that point, and that was definitely, you know, that's adding a dimension to this Cowboys defense that, you know, or excuse me, this Cowboys offense that now looking in the teeth of a 6-game suspension for Ezekiel Elliott, I'm sure they're very happy about that Switzer pick.
Yeah, and look, all of our issues with trading Jordan Matthews and the questions of where is the production in the slot going to come from? Yeah, well, they would have came with Ryan Switzer and we wouldn't be having to have this conversation. And then, you know, the reemergence, if it happens, of Nelson Agholor would just be a bonus. Instead, you know, we're concerned about Shelton Gibson even possibly making this team. And again, I wouldn't take back the Mac Hollins pick just because the way he's looked, and he's also going to provide instantly some support on the special teams, which has struggled a bit during this preseason. But I just love Ryan Switzer's game, and it's a doggone shame that we missed out on him. And now we have to defend him. Him and Cole Beasley together is a, yeah, it's a nightmare. It's an absolute nightmare.
Is democracy in danger or decline? Condoleezza Rice, William Galston, and Carlos Gutierrez and others take on this question in the fall edition of The Catalyst, a journal of ideas from the Bush Institute. Surveys show Americans place less trust in institutions like the media and business. Others contend America has faced far more challenging periods and emerged strong. Leading policymakers, Bush Institute experts and respected journalists take on this debate. Read about it at bushcenter.org/catalyst.
Any other of these picks stand out to you, Ben, as far as the Cowboys draft goes?
We probably, yeah. I mean, Noah Brown, some people were hyped about, but the lack of consistent production. He didn't put it too much of it on the field. He was spotty at Ohio State. Maybe he makes that roster. You know, I'm sure he'll slide onto a practice squad somewhere. But I don't think that's as rich of a pick as others did. There's no way we can't spend like 30 seconds talking about Xavier Woods, because Xavier Woods is a safety out of Louisiana Tech who's really good at finding the football in a way that, I mean, obviously you got CUSA competition there, and so you kind of got to put a question mark, put an asterisk. But all things considered, I mean, Xavier Woods was a highly productive college safety who could pick the ball off, and he could tackle, and he could cover in the slot, and he could cover tight ends. And they got him at 191, and there were folks who wanted him at 92 when they were grabbing Jordan Lewis, and then 100 picks later they get Xavier Woods. And so, I mean, looking at the secondary by itself, assuming Awuzie, Lewis, and Woods all make this team, which they all should, maybe Marquez White doesn't make it, that has the potential with Byron Jones to be a solid rotation for years to come. Obviously, you're assuming three rookies pan out, and you know you've got a better shot of hitting the bullseye. You know, that's a rare scenario. But either way, the Cowboys, we talked about the Giants not addressing needs. The Cowboys attacked needs.
Yeah.
I mean, they need an edge in Charlton. Like I said, Switzer was maybe a rich got richer, but if you go edge and then four secondary players in your first six rounds,
yeah,
you know what you need. And so you have to commend them for that.
Yeah, and look, it might not look the prettiest to begin with, and that's what I'm hoping for, that it takes a long time for the secondary to gel together. When we played the Dolphins, their issues in the secondary were they were communicating a lot, but nothing was really being communicating, and there was some blown coverages there. So you could see a lot of that from the Cowboys early on from these rookies. But you know, I won't argue that Awuzie, Lewis, and Woods don't make, you know, a good core of a young secondary. So hopefully it takes a little longer. And speaking of secondary, the Eagles just traded Terrence Brooks to the New York Jets, and in return we got Dexter McDougal, a cornerback. Championship.
You know what this means, Mike. You understand though, right? If Terrence Brooks is gone, 24 is available.
Uh-huh.
If 24 is available, Ronald Darby can get 24.
Uh-huh.
And if Ronald Darby gets 24, Ronald Darby will finally be a good cornerback.
That's
because
right.
Because as we've learned on this show, cornerback performance is solely reliant on the number you're wearing.
100%.
Did I do it right? Is that how I'm supposed to do it?
You did it absolutely correct. And look, he doesn't let that deep ball from Devontae Parker get by him wearing 24. That's all I'm saying.
With an extra 11 number on his back, the weight was too much. Make the vertical. I'm just grasping at straws here, man. Tell me when I should stop.
Oh, you're good. Look, so McDougal, I don't really know a whole lot about him. What I do know is that injuries have kept him off the field for his short career, so really can't quantify exactly what he is, and even if he will make the team, it doesn't look like the Eagles were too much in love with Brooks to begin with as well. So it could be a train that means absolutely nothing, but we're here to bring you Eagles news, not just talk about the Cowboys all darn day. So I'm going to bring you the news. So that was that.
With that being said, let me bring it back to the Cowboys. I have a question for you. How do you feel about Jason Garrett, just in general?
I think Garrett's a good coach, and I think it's good that he gave up the play-calling responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
So I think both things can be true, independent of each other. Other than that, I really don't have strong feelings about him.
Right. The reason I ask is because you've got a man who had Tony Romo for four full seasons, and now he had Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott last year. And you've got three seasons of 8-8. Mm-hmm. They made it to the divisional round with the Packers in 2014, and they lost. Then they had the off year with the Romo injury in 2015. Then 2016, they come back with Dak, make it to the division round of the playoffs, and they lose to the Packers again. Looking at this team, I anticipate that the defense takes a little bit of a step back. I anticipate the offense takes a step forward. For the first time in, like, what, 13 years, I think there will be a repeat winner in the NFC East. I do think the Cowboys have to be the front runner for that right now. But I don't see them as a team that can really hang with the Seattle Seahawks and the Atlanta Falcons of this conference. I don't, and the Green Bay Packers as well, obviously, is a good example, because in two of the past preseasons, or excuse me, postseasons, the Green Bay Packers have taken them out of the postseason. I wonder how for a team like Dallas with an owner like Jerry Jones that's had such a long playoff drought, I wonder how short Garrett's leash is. I'm not saying he's on the hot seat by any stretch of the imagination.
You have to
wonder. Like, I look at that, and I mean, they have an excellent defensive coordinator in Rod Marinelli, who's doing the best he can with subpar performers. They've got Scott Linehan, who calls a great offense. They've got all the pieces on offense. You wonder what the changes are going to be for Dallas going forward in the event they can't string together playoff victories, because they haven't been able to.
Yeah, I think in the next 2 years, if they don't have a playoff victory under their belt and maybe they miss out on the playoffs one of those years, that would be a definite conversation. I mean, you've got your franchise quarterback, your franchise running back, and all you have to do is build around those pieces with a fantastic offensive line. If you can't get it done in the playoffs, Jerry Jones is going to get, impatient pretty fast with that. So, yeah, I mean, that's a great point. And that kind of ties into the last question I wanted to ask you. Let's put the over-under at 10-6 for the Cowboys. Do you take the over or the under, or are we pushing?
I'm looking at the schedule right now. Without looking at the schedule, my initial thought is over right away. All right, so as far as out-of-division games go, they have the Texans, which they'll win.
The AFC West is a wood chipper, bro. Like, that could cause serious problems.
I'm looking at games that they might lose outside of the division. Broncos, Packers, Falcons. Oh, and then they end the year on Raiders, Seahawks. Jeez, yeah. Okay. Okay, ending the year is on Raiders, Seahawks. Oh, and Chiefs. Okay, their schedule's a little tougher than I thought. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll probably still take the over, because I think no matter what happens in those first six games, I think you might see, not unlike the Brady return from suspension, I think you might see Elliott come back and just start eating defenses alive. I can foresee that pretty easily. And then I definitely think that this team will be in a position to win the division, and I don't think they'll have it as comfortably as they have last year. And so I do think, those last four games, looking at Redskins, then at New York against the Giants, at Oakland against the Raiders, then home against the Seahawks, I think those will be important games for them as far as seeding goes and as far as the division goes. And so I do foresee them probably going over 11-5. I think 12-4 is probably a little rich. I'll say over because I hate pushing. I think that's lame. But I'll take the over, cautiously.
Well, I'm going to be lame and I'm going to call the push.
Oh, Michael.
At 10-6. Look, my gut instinct is to say the under, but I don't want to jinx it. So I'll phrase it like that.
Right. That way, if you're wrong, it's like, better. It feels better. Whereas I took the over, and then if they're the under, now I just suck.
All right. So tomorrow we are going to be talking about the Eagles again. Offensive side of the ball, 53-man roster projection. And then the next day we will do defensive side of the ball, 53-man roster projection as well. So who we cutting, who we keeping, all that good stuff. Ben, thank you, brother. I hope you enjoy the rest of your Game of Thrones.
Oh, my goodness. I'm so excited. You know what else is fun, though? Next week, next Monday, when you come back and tune in with us, we'll be prepping for the first regular season game on September 10th. That's a good feeling, baby. Man.
Yeah, that is extremely exciting. And look, if you want to hear our analysis of that game as well, and throughout the rest of the preseason, hear our projections. Of course, you got to keep it locked on here on Locked On Eagles. Fly, Eagles, fly.
Is democracy in danger or decline? Condoleezza Rice, William Galston, and Carlos Gutierrez and others take on this question in the fall edition of The Catalyst, a journal of ideas from the Bush Institute. Surveys show Americans place less trust in institutions like the media and business. Others contend America has faced far more challenging periods and emerged strong. Leading policymakers, Bush Institute experts, and respected journalists take on this debate. Read about it at bushcenter.org/catalyst.